Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Warriors.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show Advance, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, or does it? I'm not sold on the name yet. We're going to talk about retro. This is the retro show. And what we usually do on the retro show is we time travel. We take a peek back in time. We do it sort of semi-chronologically. So we're going to peek back 21 years to October 2001. And fellas, oof, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, dark days. Dark days are upon us.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
So yeah, the world had ended. We just didn't know it yet. So we are going to have some video games. We've got some video games to talk about, a handful of GBA games, and a couple of, at least one really significant PS2 game that came out.
Two worth talk about. One, I don't think, is undeniably a top 10 video game ever made.
I have five PS2 games. I'm not going to spend too much time discussing any of these particular PS2 games, but I think it is worth mentioning that these things exist. Well, we do have some stuff to give some historical context, some backdrop to these video games and movies and music releasing. So, in the world of baseball, fellas.
That's happening right now.
Sammy Sosa hit 60 home runs for the season, his third season of hitting 60 home runs, at least. So, that is a MLB record from noted cheater Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
Well, Ricky Henderson tied Ty Cobb's record of 2,245 runs. So that's also pretty significant.
I would assume he probably has a lot of stolen base records that are just his own anyways, right?
Ricky Henderson?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But it would make sense, though. Barry Bonds tied Babe Ruth for the most walks in one season at 171. I don't know how many of those were intentional, but probably a significant amount.
That is absurd. Yeah, that's about a walk a game.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Barry Bonds hit in the month of October his 70th, 71st, and 72nd home run, which broke Mark McGwire's record of 70, which he had set a few years previous. I think 2 or 3 years previous, if memory serves correctly. But yeah, both noted cheater Mark McGwire and suspected cheater Barry Bonds, highly likely.
Yeah.
Broke this home run record.
But Clemens was also using steroids too. So if you take that into account, the pitchers are harder.
Wes, why are you raising your hand?
Because I want you to pause it so I can open the soda, so it won't make an obnoxious noise during the pod.
I'd do it anyway.
But, you know, instead, we're going to address this.
We're raising your hand like you're in class.
Well, you guys are talking, though. We're going to be pausing point.
Well, you don't listen to the show, and you don't know that before you start saying stuff. He fully works in a fart sound.
But it's a Pikachu fart, so it's adorable.
What does that sound? What? Like, it's wait. When you say it's Pikachu fart, is it... Like, are you covering
up? Why did you close it back up?
Because I'm addressing this real quick, all right? So you say your fart sounds like someone going Pikachu, or it's a fart that a Pikachu would make.
The fart a Pikachu would make.
I don't know why this is confusing. All right, move on.
Okay. But noted not cheaters, the Atlanta Braves won the 10th straight division title, which is not only a baseball record, but a sports record.
That for is most unbelievable people. To have done that.
What an amazing franchise to go to have that sort of sustained success.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the not happy stuff. Let's see, NATO, North Atlantic
Trade
Alliance.
Yeah, trade organization.
Yeah, backed the U.S. military strikes following 9/11. So we started attacking Afghanistan, and all of the allies backed us up on that one. George W. Bush appointed a Homeland Security Advisor, who was Tom Ridge, who was the Pennsylvania governor at the time. But then he later became the head of the Office of Homeland Security when George W. Bush established that, not like a week or two later. And on October 7th, the United States invaded Afghanistan in retaliation for the 9/11 attacks.
And terms it, quote-unquote, the war on terror, which is about the dumbest thing one could do militaristically. Just to simply say that there is a war on terror. Terror is not a definable thing.
Right.
It's a genre movie.
What?
That is horror.
Oh.
But yeah,
I'm not funny, I know.
Okay. Sorry, I wasn't following that at all.
But to have a war on terror, it doesn't really give you a definable objective.
Right, what's the end state?
Yeah, right. So, you know, you're going to go in and you're going to overthrow a terrorist organization. you know, in Afghanistan, which is run by the Taliban. But the Taliban isn't the one that did the attack. They're certainly pro Al Qaeda, but they're not necessarily the ones that, you know, had Al Qaeda do the attacks.
Right.
So it essentially creates this state where we are now 20 years later, where we're just now getting out of this war in Afghanistan because there was no clear objective on what to do. It was just a means by which we funneled trillions of dollars
and then into
a pointless war that we would lose.
As soon as we get out, guess who comes right back in and takes over? It's the Taliban.
Yeah, exactly.
So spoilers for everyone listening in the past, nothing's going to come out of this.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And or there's some paramilitary organizations are going to get super fucking rich.
Yeah, we're going to funnel a lot of money to defense contractors. And yeah, it will basically mean that we now have a kind of our own space in the Middle East, which just, again, invites insurgents to attack us. But we now kind of have a footprint, an established footprint in the Middle East for American interests. It's kind of wild. I mean, it would be like, imagine if just fucking Wyoming got taken over by Russia, and Russia's just like, hey,
we're going to hang out here now.
We're here now. Yeah. We see all you around us, but we got this. You know? It's kind of like that, except the inverse of the power structure.
Yeah. And it's, you know, obviously turned out to be a mistake. I have a few other things, but we'll just like close out the political stuff with the passing of the Patriot Act, which was on October 26th. Which, among other things, gave the government, specifically like the FBI and the NSA,
Power. Just free reign surveillance, essentially. I mean, I understand that they had to go through. Oh, go ahead. You have the.
Oh, no. You're exactly where I was going. It gave them the ability to spy on their citizens, obtain phone records and things from a telecommunications company without the people whose records they're obtaining knowing about it.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And.
And that thinly veiled, like, rubber stamp process of warrants needed to do it, where it's clear that there was no vetting being done of whether or not these people needed to be surveilled in the first place. It was just an excuse, a very, very cheap excuse for them to start monitoring all of us.
Yep. And specifically, not really if you look like any of us in this room, but specifically people who have darker skin.
Mm-hmm.
So, this was a sort of political move where I forget the name of the senator, but it passes through the House of Representatives by votes of like 370 votes to like 60, and then one through the Senate for like 96 votes to one.
Bernie,
so three senators abstained. I don't know if Bernie was in the Senate or abstained, but the no vote was a senator from a Democrat from Wisconsin, I believe it was.
Okay.
I can't remember his name, but. Basically, like, for everything we're saying, like, hey, this is an overreach. But at the time, it would have been political suicide for anyone who was, like, more progressive to vote against this sort of thing. Things that usually, like, the sort of right to privacy is more closely associated with, you know, people who are more progressive as opposed to more conservative. But, you know, all of these Democrats and progressive and moderate pass this thing, vote for this thing, because
I mean, you're a month in the aftermath of the worst
and
terror attack in world history. Well, I don't say world history, who knows, but certainly in modern history.
And if you vote against it, then of course you're weak on terror. You're pro terrorist if you're not willing to do these sort of things, or that's the perception anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd be political suicide at the time to not back these sort of unethical and bad decisions. But as it will turn out, we'll find out in 2002, it doesn't matter if they backed it or not, because there's going to be this huge wave of Republicans coming through, because in the time of the country, we associate strong military and good military practices with the Republican Party. So they could have just taken a moral stance and said, no, this is bad, we're not going to vote for it, and probably paid the same political price as they did just by going along with it.
Yeah.
But spoilers for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other historical events that you wanted to bring up, Ryan, or anything else about...
Yeah, quite a few. with what's going on currently with Russia and Ukraine, I think it's interesting that this was when, kind of a footnote, but on October 4th, Siberian Airlines Flight 1812 was shot down over the Black Sea and route from Tel Aviv to Novosibirsk, which is in Russia.
Mm.
78 people were on board and were killed. This is during a quote-unquote training exercise between a joint operation between Russia and Ukraine. Vladimir Putin would say that the missile that shot the plane down couldn't have come from them because the missiles that they were testing couldn't even reach the height of the airplane, which is total bullshit.
And what a weird bullshit. What a weird excuse. It could have been us. We suck.
Half the people were his own citizens. Of course, what did the Russians care about the life of their people? You know. But yeah, so this is, again, this is an interesting thing for them to have been doing, and it shows how closely intertwined Ukraine was with Russia at the time. And again, it's also not going to be the only time they shoot down a passenger airline. They shoot down another one. I don't even remember when it was. It could have been 3 years ago. It could have been 8 years ago. I don't remember, but not that long ago, they shot down another airline by accident, purely by accident. So that happened. Like you're saying, October 7th, that's when we invade Afghanistan. Homeland Security is October 8th. That is also, again, another kind of airplane disaster. This Linate Airport, where a twin-engine Cessna and a Scandinavian airline jetliner collided in Italy, killing 118 people. So another just tragic event. An Indonesian fishing boat, and this is October 19th, an Indonesian fishing boat sinks that was carrying refugees. 353 people are dead there. And one thing that's not a horrible thing, October 23rd, the Apple iPod is introduced.
Yeah. not a terrible thing.
Which comes 10 years...
21 years ago, Wes, you feel old?
Just plane crash, death, iPod.
I think it's wild that about 600 people died from essentially boat and plane crashes. That is just a fuck ton of people for 1 month, and the month immediately after the September 11th attacks, in which 2,977 people died. You know, so just the truly horrific. What must have been every day, just the news scrolling must have been like, here's a couple hundred more people that are dead. It was a very strange time. It must have just like felt like, not the end of days, but it's just like, what a harrowing time.
Yeah, existence was terrifying.
But then the Apple iPod is a huge thing because it's a major change in the way that we consume media. And it's also, I think it was January of this year, January 2001, is when they launched iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
So you now have iTunes, the place where you can go to buy your music, and then you can sync them up with your iPod and carry it around. Ditch your Walkman forever. Like, don't buy CDs anymore, even if you've got this Apple iPod.
It was a really disruptive piece of tech because the old saying was like, while Sony was trying to invent a Walkman that didn't skip, Apple was just like, here, just download.
Yeah, bingo.
And it like physical media, when it comes to like consuming musical media, is going to change drastically because of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can get all your pirated music from Napster onto your iPod.
Yeah, and BearShare. I do all that all day.
So that's all you had for...
That's my current events.
I do have a couple more current events. This was when the anthrax letters were going out.
Yes,
there are two of them that went out.
Mm-hmm.
Two that were known of. Then this was when...
I think 17 deaths total from the anthrax letters.
Yeah, and I don't even remember...
Like a couple hundred people... like, sickened by it or made ill by it.
And I don't even remember how, like, it all shook out, but I remember there was a time where, like, people were terrified of the mail and traveling because of all the deaths.
Yeah.
And if there was, like, a white powder on your mail, like, you know, you had to call in the FBI. And, like, then not only were there, like, actual, like, anthrax letters being sent out, there were also just hoaxes where people would just put, like, a white baby powder, like, baking soda or baby powder in a letter and cause a freak out.
Yeah, I didn't make any notes about it because it was just the first deaths. I figured when they actually arrest the guy is when I would talk about it. I remember reading up on who it was. It wasn't anybody associated with Islamic extremism. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was just a very crazy, deranged doctor that had a chemist that had access to the chemicals. And he shipped them to a lot of Democrats. It looked like he was trying to intentionally send it to people that were in the, like, the DNC and the, the heads of the Democratic infrastructure. So, I don't even remember the guy's name. I'm sure we'll get to it when, of course, over the coming months, more and more people will die from this.
Right. So, Windows XP launched.
Yeah.
Wow.
So no more 95. Windows 95 was for real.
Yeah, yeah. There was, like...
I had 98.
Yeah, 98 was in between, of course, XP and 95, but 98, notoriously, not great. But neither here nor there.
Much like Nintendo, every other console is good.
Oh, so wait. I mean, maybe since the Super Nintendo, because like NES,
I'm being mean.
NES and Super Nintendo both good. I think like we can agree like
post
N64 had its moments.
Yes,
like it's fine.
Yeah,
but like definitely not a high point. And well, God, fellas, we're getting to the GameCube. God, what a console, you guys. Not going to be as commercially successful as in terms of like hardware sales as the N64. But I think like just the software available for the thing is like far and away, way past what was offered on the N64 outside of like the top tier stuff.
Didn't mean to trigger you there. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. we're gonna figure this out though. But like the Wii, Wii's a good console.
The Wii's an incredible console. The Wii U is the one that I would think is their miss.
So maybe we're looking at like a 2-1-2-1 pattern.
I wasn't prepared for this deep of a look as to whether or not it is true that they leapfrog goodness in consoles.
I think
they need a tax write-off every 3 or 4 years.
Oh, so that means the next one's going to be crap?
No. The next one's going to be good, but then whatever follows the Switch 2 is probably going to be another low point.
So you're saying the Switch is a low point?
No. Because we...
Wii U. Oh, 2-1-2-1.
Yeah. Two good consoles.
I can't math.
Two good consoles followed by a bad one.
Okay.
Is what we're looking at.
So the one after the Super Switch.
Right. And like the handhelds are excluded from this because the handhelds are all great.
I have an idea. They should call it the Nintendo Sega Dolphin.
Oh, that's great.
Right. Like really confuse everything.
That's perfect.
64.
Nintendo Sega Dolphin 64 plus one.
I mean, we are coming up. We are coming up to the GameCube launch. And
yeah, that's right. You had some specs you're in.
I don't have any hardware specs, but it was a console that was announced a couple years prior to launch. It was codenamed the Dolphin at the time. Of course, revealed to be the Nintendo GameCube, which is, you know, it's a little cube that plays games. So they did it.
And the discs were so tiny.
They went with an optical media for the first time because the other consoles had been cartridges up to this point.
And they just had to be fucking weird about it, didn't they?
They really did. And it was so such a bizarre decision because everything was going optical media. Sega went optical and then died. Sony had been doing optical media since the PS1 and had really great success. Microsoft... they had an upcoming console that will launch in the same month as the GameCube. We don't talk about Microsoft, though. That had optical media. But they were like, okay, well, we'll get on board with this, but little mini ones. And it would cause problems for them because on those little optical, I forget what even the proprietary media was called, but on those little discs, it just can't store as much data. You can't read enough data off of it. So there will be games that would be like multi-platform games that were ported from like a PS2, but would have to come on two discs. I mean, even the first one that comes to mind is Code Veronica. Code Veronica will get a port on GameCube, but it'll have two discs as opposed to one disc on both Dreamcast and PS2.
Well, they probably saw what went wrong with Sega's model, and they're just like, so everybody could just go buy a stack of CDRs and then just copy our entire library.
Maybe.
They probably saw like hardware issues down the line where they're like, somebody's going to crack the code on how to just basically burn discs and play that on the systems.
So it will make the discs like just difficult to obtain by having them be proprietary. Sure.
Yeah.
And like, and it's not like you could burn a different disc and put it into your GameCube because it will only read... The small, like bigger discs won't fit in there. The plane won't fit in.
That was also such a tiny little console.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, it's adorable. Like the PS2, like the PS2 will eventually get like the slim
a handle
model.
On it.
A little handle for portability. Oh,
that's great.
Yeah, and it launched in only purple. It was the only color you could get. Of course, at the time we were all like edgy and cool. We were in the modern era of gaming, so we didn't want like things that looked like toys anymore. Wii isn't. The general capital G gamers. So it had aesthetic issues with, you know, what people were willing to tolerate, like what is cool and what is lame. I love the design of the game.
For every misstep, it seems like there's something else that they just got perfectly right.
Mm.
You know?
And
the controller's fucking amazing.
The design might have been a misstep at the time, but I think they nailed it. I think like the only I think that everyone was wrong rather than Nintendo being wrong about the design is everyone else was wrong about it being a dumb looking design. And the controller is great.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought the controller back.
The
you
controller
put it on the Switch. They made a Switch version.
It never went away. Like the Wii will have GameCube controller ports. The Wii U would eventually get an adapter to where you could plug in GameCube controllers. So you could play Smash Brothers with the GameCube. It's an ideal controller for what the type of games Nintendo will make, specifically games like Mario and Zelda and Metroid and Smash Brothers and Mario Kart, these sort of things, like these S-tier franchises.
S-tier, indeed.
Maybe not Metroid. We'll see. But yeah, do you guys own a GameCube?
I do.
I bought it off a friend of mine.
How long? When did you get one?
Middle school.
Okay. So you had one when it was current, right? Middle school, yeah.
It's been out for a while. It was out for a while when I had
it. Yeah, it came out in 2001.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was in middle school, so...
It's been out longer than 9 months. It has been a while.
Yeah.
I bought a GameCube. I think it wasn't at launch. Because this was the first console that I actually had disposable income. Like, I bought it myself. I might have bought my own N64, but I don't remember exactly. But
how much was it at launch?
Well, $199. It was okay. $200. It did not keep that price point for very long. And we'll get into, like, GameCube sales in a different show. Not this one. This is the happy show about the GameCube. But it did not hold that $199 price tag for very long. It did very quickly in gaming terms, quickly drop to $99. So pretty cheap old console, considering, like, consoles now are $300-$500, and even handhelds, like the 3DS launched at $250 and then went down to $179. So these GameCubes were, you know,
because I think I remember I bought off my friend for $100, but he gave me all his games.
Well, nice.
So it was a bargain.
So I didn't get a GameCube until Wind Waker came out, because that was the game that I bought with my GameCube. But this was first console I had disposable income, so this was probably the console, like, at the time, like, you can see my games on the shelf. I thought I had, like, this treasure trove of games, and I had so many games for the damn thing, because I had more than, like, five. But yeah, I branched out, played a lot of different types of games, whereas, you know, N64 or, like, Super Nintendo, I was playing, like, Mario, Zelda, maybe a Final Fantasy on the Super Nintendo, but mostly, like, the staple games, whereas GameCube, I had money, so I was like, yeah, I'll try this one, and I'll buy that one, and I'll play Metroid, why not? Ryan, you had a GameCube?
I did not. I've actually never owned a GameCube.
We got to get him a GameCube.
Do we? Yeah.
Well, I gave you my controller.
How did you get the controller?
I actually have a ton of... Maybe I do own one. Gives you a sense of how often I play it. No, I know I've got a bunch of content for it. I've got a bunch of GameCube games. I've got the controllers. I actually think, God, maybe I do have one. My old roommate had one. I had a roommate, God, like, fucking...
God was your roommate?
12 years ago.
Oh.
He went by Jesus, but yeah. I mean, this is the son of God.
God's in everyone. God's everyone's roommate.
No.
He lives inside all of us.
His name's Lauren. He was...
Amen, Les.
Yeah.
God's real name is Lauren?
Hello, are you? Yeah, he's Hispanic.
Loren.
He actually does sound... I don't know what he's been up to lately, but I know he did sound design on one of the God of War games.
Oh, shit.
He lives in Los Angeles and works on video games. But yeah, he had tons of old consoles and video games and stuff like that. And he had a GameCube. We played GameCube games and stuff like that. I don't remember specifically, like, what all we played. My go-to is just that I would tell him I wanted to play Brawl. I mean, we just play Brawl.
Or Melee at the time.
Not on the GameCube.
On the Wii.
That was when I had a Wii at the time, so we were playing that, and we got super into Brawl.
I preferred Brawl over Melee.
Okay.
Yeah, aside from the tripping thing.
But like our share.
Aside from the tripping thing, I think Brawl is like fucking amazing.
Well, it was slower paced, and so I could follow it better. I mean, Melee. I mean, I went to one. No, it was for Brawl. I went to one tournament for Brawl. I got my ass kicked. Okay.
Yeah. It sounded like a traumatic experience.
It was.
All you do is downhammer and then bake in the edge.
It's weird how they track things, too, because I remember being at that tournament, and they're like, that guy right there. He's the top 3 Kirby player in Florida. I'm like, why are we tracking that?
Like, how weirdly specific. Out of like 7. He's top 3 out of 7.
Like, all right. Like,
well, you guys ever heard of, what is it, Hungrybox?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
The guy from, he's the Kirby player, wasn't he?
No.
Jigglypuff. Jigglypuff was his
name. He was Jigglypuff.
Yeah. That's a good question. Who does keep track of that?
That's just a weird thing to track.
It's like, all right.
We'll talk about Melee when it comes up. It's not too far off.
So yeah, I have a little bit of exposure to the GameCube through that, but I mean, I don't know. I don't really know much about it.
We're gonna see a lot of like a wider breadth of software, because it seemed like when we talked about N64 games, it was okay. Well, here's this 3D platformer. Here's a shooter, and then maybe we talk about a sports game every once in a while.
Frankly, I'm on the fence about getting one too, if I don't already have one, because it's like, I remember when I got the N64, I was like pumped. I was like, I'm gonna get into this. I'm gonna dig into this. And it's like, I just got so bored of the games. And I was like, these are not, so the ones I wanted to play too were not cheap. So I have to get them, and then I'd start playing them, and I'm like, man, this is not the experience that I was hoping for. I know GameCube is going to be a 21st century gaming experience, or whatever you want to call it.
We're definitely entering a modern era of gaming.
Yeah.
I think you'll probably find, and of course, depending on, you know, people's individual financial situation, I don't want to like try to pass judgment on where you should not spend your money.
I feel like you should, though.
He's calling me poor is what he's doing right now.
GameCube games
are
significantly pricier than, at the very least, someone that came out. Like the retro market for the GameCube, because it will be officially retro next month. It's pricey. It's pricey to get these things. Of course, there are GameCube emulators out there if you want to use, you know, unethical means, but it's not like you can buy them anywhere. You can,
I imagine a lot of these games are going to be readily available on the Switch too, in some capacity. I feel like there's probably a lot of GameCube games that have in some way have been ported.
Me and Wes are like, we both have the same look on our face, like, are there?
Are they? I can't think of anything.
I mean, like, Wind Waker had a Wii U HD port, but I'm like looking at the game and you're like, Double Dash?
I'd like to play Wind Waker again.
Wind Waker's like a solid game. Talk about that one. The Resident Evils are,
yeah, like, I don't need a GameCube to play Resident Evil games. I've played them my entire life.
I'm sorry. We're talking a lot about the GameCube. Did it come out in October?
No. But we're going to spend a lot of time actually talking about the launch games in November. So
okay.
We might as well.
So we're getting it. Okay. Now I understand what we're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, we're vamping for the conversation.
The final horses cross the finish line. We're on board here.
I mean, weirdly enough, like, games like Mario Sunshine is available on Switch through the Mario 3D collection, but that is no longer available. You can probably still get a copy if you really want
to. I have a copy. I already have a copy of it.
But like the Zeldas are not available on Switch. The Metroid games are not available on Switch. I mean, X-Men Legends.
I can't really think of any of those.
X-Men Legends, what a gem.
I actually already own a copy of X-Men Legends. But not on the GameCube.
But weirdly enough, like, one of the GameCube games that is available on Switch is Ikaruga.
Yeah, that is weird.
Of all the GameCube games that make their way over.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll look for, I mean, as we go through the catalog, I'll look for legitimate means to play them. And, I mean, if I really find one I really want to play, I'm sure I could just borrow your GameCube. Or I could just come over here and we could play it if you've got it. Yeah, I don't know if you're planning on stocking up on actual hard copies of all of these, if they're as expensive as you're saying.
Again, it's going to depend on cost. Like, I have a lot of the GameCube games that I would want, but there are some really cost prohibitive ones that I probably won't get. So, anything else about the GameCube we need to address before we jump into actual games that came out?
It was in the shape of a cube.
It was, and it played games.
Yes.
I think we covered that already, though.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
So, we got some Game Boy Advance games that came out.
That we do.
In October of 2001. Of course, as it is still the early 2000s, we got a version of Doom on the GBA.
Yeah, I mean, Doom is on everything.
Yep.
Doom, yeah, it's just there.
There it is.
If you get one of those, like, smart appliances for your kitchen, it probably runs Doom. Mm.
Anything else we need to say about Doom?
Oh, it's a fucking amazing game. People should play it if they never have, just for the, you know, just for the history of it, you know?
Yep. The, what would you call it, the original first-person shooter?
Yeah, and there's also, like, you know, it is kind of funny. Like, literally everything, every device in modern days feels like it has been designed to play a Doom game. Mm. There's better shooters, but there is just something really fun about it being the first. Not the first. It's not the first, but
well, but it does predate like the first person shooter
genre,
as it was called a first person shooter. Other first person shooters were called Doom likes until first person shooter became a thing. Mm-hmm. You can buy this game on GBA if you want. Cost is $70.
God, that's expensive.
I know, right?
Keeping in mind that it was on the SNES too.
Mm.
You know, you get
on the SNES or free on your PC,
right?
Let's see. We also got a version of Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo Revival. That's Super Street Fighter 2 : Turbo Revival.
All right.
And this was a port of Street Fighter 2 Turbo, of course. And I was reading up on this one a little bit. Street Fighter, if you're unfamiliar with Ryan, I'm sure you'll correct me if I get something wrong here. It is to your advantage to have the extra face buttons at your disposal. So Super Nintendo works because you got the shoulder buttons and you got the four face buttons. GBA only has four buttons you can work with, A, B, and then the shoulders.
Oh my God, yeah, how does that even work?
They had to, I think, I'm going to have to do some fact checking again and like maybe correct it on the next show, but I think what you ended up having to do was like map what button was going to be, what is like your quick, medium, fierce attacks, like pre-fight, and then just roll with what you had. And like maybe the select button would toggle between, I don't know.
Shouldn't do that now.
It is such a small number of buttons to work with. And we talked about this when we talked about the launch of the GBA. It was very strange that you only go two face buttons.
It's like you were playing Xenoblade and they said, you get to break and you get to smash, but no toppling, good sir.
But you gotta topple.
Yeah, you need to topple.
You can't just break and smash. Ugh. That just ruins Ryan time.
It does.
God.
they did mix up some of the, like the stages. I think like Guile's stage got totally reworked, and they like took
His stage is for real though, man. With the fucking jet fighters.
It's perfect. I don't know why they needed to mess with it. Yeah. But there were other stages where they like pulled from different versions of Street Fighter and put it in there, so it wasn't just like a one for one port of Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
My favorite thing is that in Chun-Li's China stage, there's this guy in the back that's like strangling a chicken, but it's like he's choking a chicken. Looks like he's masturbating. It's great.
Yeah, that's the euphemism.
Yeah.
Choking the chicken? Yeah.
It's funny.
Hilarious. Mm-hmm. So, anything else about Street Fighter 2 that we need to address? Like, it had to have been super wonky.
Street Fighter 2 is like the what Doom is to first-person shooters. Like, Street Fighter 2 has to be to the
that's a good point.
2D fighters.
Yeah, that's a crazy month.
Not Street Fighter?
What?
Well, not Street Fighter, but Street Fighter 2.
Have you ever played the original Street
Fighter? Original Street Fighter.
I never played any of them.
Oh, it's not a particularly great game.
Oh.
Street Fighter 2 is a modernization of it. If anything, the original Street Fighter plays almost more like fucking Final Fight.
Yeah, it's more of a brawler.
Yeah, it's a weird game, and it's not very good. Street Fighter 2 is a very crisp, clean, well-animated. The fighting is inviting yet intricate. You know, there are no like there's no combo thing where it's like combo 6, 7, 8 hits, but there very much is that feel of combos. Really important things like cross ups and using throws and the way the blocking works in it. All of this will become like fucking staple mechanics for the 2D fighter genre. So yeah, it is very much the modern. The first, like, what feels like the first modern 2D fighter, although I'm sure there have been many others made in and around that time.
I do have one last game, and it is Mega Man Battle Network. That one came out on the GBA on October the 30th. Developed by Capcom, of course, and published by Capcom. And this is a game, it's sometimes described as an RPG, I think because of lack of descriptors for what the game actually is. It is not...
Farming Sim?
Farming Sim, perfect. Yeah. It is not a Mega Man game in the way that we had known Mega Man games up to this point. It is not like a side-scrolling, run-and-gun, platforming, taking on your robot masters and using the powers that you get to do this like rock, paper, scissors in order to defeat the next one.
Yeah, I tried to play this game. It was confusing.
I've also tried to play it. I don't think that it helps. It definitely skews younger. And there are critics who speculated that they were trying to go in more of like a Pokemon direction with this thing. And you can kind of see that with the presentation. It's got an isometric view. So rather than like having a stage select and choosing which robot master you're going to go after first, it plays more episodically. So you'll have a little story segment and then you'll like engage with the gameplay, and then you'll defeat the boss, and then it will close out, and then it will do a time skip, and it will tell you like a few days later or like a month later, and then you'll play through another story segment and fight a different boss, and you do things like collect their powers in sort of roundabout way, but we'll get to that in a minute. But you don't have that that stage select, so you don't have the freedom to go wherever you want and play through these levels. So it's a much more directed progression that you're going through. So where was I? Oh, you start, you're in this they just kind of drop you into this town. You're supposed to chase your objectives, and it's a nice looking game. It's got a nice color palette, really bright. They don't exactly funnel you toward your first objective very cleanly, so sometimes it takes a little while to like ramp up and actually get to the gameplay. You're not involved,
so you're just kind of going on a trail doing battles. Is that the idea? You're like on kind of a set course and you're doing battles, or do you actually like walk around and explore?
So when what'll happen is like the story impetus for when you're actually engaging in fights is you're this kid, you live in this town, and the internet has become like this new exciting thing. But it was made in 2001, so like the idea of wireless internet is still very like foreign. So
yeah, Corona 5G.
Exactly. They don't know that's all going to give you Corona yet. Yeah. So in order to access the internet, you're actually like plugging like a USB dongle, like, and you have like a smart device. You have like a tablet or something, really? Which was probably super novel in 2001. Like, my goodness, they're connecting their portable game console to the internet. But you actually had to like plug in. Like, there's the story, the narrative impetus was like you plug in your device to all these different things that connect you to the internet through like a hard line, and like things like ovens and terminals and a lamppost at one point in the game. Like, your lamppost has like a USB dongle and you can plug into that to access the internet. It's very silly. But when you access when you go into the internet and you take over as this a sort of avatar for your main lead character, they call it a net navigator. And it is Mega Man. That's when you start playing as Mega Man. And when you're in the internet playing as Mega Man, it's a sort of maze, and as you're going through the maze, you're doing things like there's slide puzzles, like you slide on ice. There are puzzles where you like have to turn on and off water valves in order to like find your way through these mazes. And when you're in these mazes, you get into these random battle encounters, much like an old RPG. Splash screen, go into a fight, and then you're in these fights, and it's kind of RPG adjacent, the way that you engage with these fights.
Yeah, it's like a grid that you can move through.
It's a 3x3 grid on your side and a 3x3 grid on the opponent's side.
Yeah.
And then it's different, like, when it comes to the actual show, it was like chips or anything that do different kinds of attacks and everything, and you can do certain ones to take over more grid to move forward.
There was a show. You're correct.
There was a show. I watched it when I was younger. Okay. I really liked the show when I was younger.
Huh.
It's a weird
system. I can't remember if you're actually taking over grid territory in the actual game. Maybe.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
watched a video of it. So there's a 3x3 grid, and there's certain chips that will take over like a row of grids so you can move closer. They have melee chips and like range chips or what, I don't know what they forget.
So there's a sort of deck building aspect to this game. You can collect all these chips. There's like 175 of these different chips that you can go and get from. You can buy them. You can get them from boss encounters. You can get them from regular random encounters. And all of these chips will do different things. Like you were saying, it can give you a melee attack, and give you a rage deck. It can have an effect. Like, the only way to run away from a fight is to have the chip in your deck that will give you the command to run away from a fight.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're kind of stuck doing every fight. And they sort of circumvent the annoyance of that. There is a high encounter rate, so getting into all these fights is annoying. But what they do is they restore your HP after every fight. So you're never like in a crunch where you're like low on resources. They don't even have like health restore resources in the first game. So when you get into these fights, you're moving on a 3x3 grid, and an enemy might unleash an attack that a little broadcast is going to hit these squares on the grid. So if you move out of the way, you won't take damage. And you have your regular Buster attack. You got your regular little gun. which can do chip damage to the enemy. You can also charge it up and do a little bit more damage. But the main way you're using, you're dishing out damage is by using those chips you were talking about. And when, but before you enter like in like the sort of internet area, before you're actually engaging in fights, you build your deck. Like, I'm going to take all these chips with me. But when you actually enter a fight, it then sort of like will shuffle your deck, and you'll have to choose which five of these chips, these sort of skill commands, that you want to take into that round. And those are the only five you'll be able to use in that round. There's a timer. When the timer expires or the meter fills all the way up, it'll allow you to shuffle again and pick more things. And there's a sort of economy to which ones you can and which ones you should take. Because you have to like be matching up these letters or attributes in order to maximize the efficiency or the power, the potency of the attacks. Even sometimes like just basically executing certain attacks using these chips will require that numbers match up. So there's a sort of strategy to building out your deck, your equipment set, where, you know, maybe you'll have a super powerful attack, but you don't have any sort of a number or like any other sort of core element that will match it up. So it will deem it useless. So it's to your advantage to maybe take some stuff that's weaker, but then you can actually like string together and execute more attacks. So it's like a quantity over quality sort of method to the fight. But the shuffling mechanic, like changing up the chips that you're getting after a certain amount of time in each fight, will also factor into the, just the basic commands that you can use. Like I was saying, like the only way to run away is to have the item, the chip, in your deck that will allow you to use that command. But if it shuffles on you, you might not even have the option to put it like in your hand to use during that round. So it might not even be worth it to take it at all if, you know, you're not going to be able to access it quickly. Like, what would be the point of engaging with a fight for a couple of rounds only then to get the flee command? Like, well, I'm already almost done. Why would I bother running away at all? So it's a weird...
Seems very un-Mega Man-like as right. You describe it, though. It right. Sounds like one of your... It sounds like a JRPG.
Right. It's Mega Man in yeah. Sort of... In sort of like aesthetic only.
Yeah.
They did have another Mega Man in development at the time, Mega Man Zero, which we'll talk about next year. So it could have been that, like, hey, we already have like our core Mega Man, but we want to do something else. What's
the other... Yeah, let's pull Kirby with it.
Yeah. Or they could have just been like, we get something out quickly, do something with Mega Man. And somebody had like, all right, well, what about chips? I don't know where you're going with this, but yes.
I'm pretty sure, I mean, it's possible the show came out first and I made a game based on the show.
Is it? Possible. I don't know.
Fact check. I have no idea.
Let's look it up.
Yeah, they're actually coming out with a Legacy Collection. For yeah, all these Battle Network games.
Yeah, I think it's next year. Well, I think it's early next year.
N of these Battle Network games.
Yeah. There's a ton of them.
There's 10 of these.
Well, some of them, there's that many because there are different versions. Eventually, it will become more Pokemon-like in that they will release two versions of the game with slight differences between the two. You're also getting your more powerful chips from bosses. And there are some familiar faces with the bosses, like Fireman and Iceman and Elec Man. Like one of your NPC buddies in the game will have a net navigator for Guts Man from Mega Man 1. There's Dr. Wily making an appearance. It's all like, and then the sort of like antagonistic group is a group that's they're called World 3, but the way that they represent that in text is with a WWW. And all of the things like in this game, like the way they talk about the internet and the way that they reference things like tech, it all seems very quaint. And it probably also seemed quaint in 2001, but even more so now, 21 years later. And like the terminology they're using, it all just seems very stilted and silly.
Did y'all ever watch that CG animated series reboot?
I remember that one. Yeah,
it's probably like what Reboot thought the internet was going to be like. They're kind of telling of how the internet's supposed to work.
Yeah,
it's kind of adorable in its quaintishness.
It's gonna be
that's a word.
It's gonna be exactly like it's gonna be virtual reality, and you'll go and you'll walk around, kind of like what the metaverse is like. Oh, you'll be able to meet up with your friends in this virtual store and walk around. Like, well, you've kind of like we don't want to walk around the store, which is why it's like so much easier to just go to a page and click on something and buy that. Like, so I don't want to walk around. I just want to do it with my fingers.
God, there's a trading card game.
You've missed the... You once again whiffed, Mark Zuckerberg. You missed the ball.
Yeah. I can't figure out what came first.
Okay.
The manga, the anime, or the game. I have no idea. But the, I would guess it was the manga before everything, and then... Boom.
Maybe. We'll do some fact-checking and update on the next show. Sure, along with that other thing that I totally forgot about already.
There was a card game. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, this was like a multimedia endeavor. The first of a few times where Capcom would try to do that with one of their franchises. Hmm. But yeah, this was... There was already a bit of Mega Man fatigue. I think a bit unfair up to this point. Because games like... We talked about like Mega Man 7 on the Super Nintendo. We talked about, I think we talked briefly in passing about some like the Mega Man X games on PS1, as well as I think it was Mega Man 8 that was on PS1. I thought like all of those games were pretty solid, with a couple of notable exceptions. Some of the X games, like in the middle, weren't all that great. But
a lot of... I almost bought Mega Man 11 today.
I like Mega Man 11. I think it's a good game.
It's like 10 bucks on the eShop right now.
But the sort of general prognosis for the Mega Man franchise for a while had been like, oh, it's on its way out, and like these games are all very formulaic. And then like all of these games, we were inundated with Mega Man games on handheld devices, and I think that the fatigue is really going to set in throughout the early 2000s, so much so that Mega Man is going to go on this hiatus for quite some time, and we won't know what we've been missing.
Yeah, I remember you doing that video game news show on YouTube when you tried to get that going. And it was about...
I don't know that I ever even posted that.
But I remember like you made an article saying...
oh, yeah, that got intricate. I like made like a fake Twitter account.
Yeah, you did. You went nuts with that thing. And it said, like, my son, they've killed my son.
God, the things we did 15 years ago.
That was great.
That's almost old enough to be on that retro show.
Holy shit. Jeez. We're going to review our own shit.
Oh, amazing. Yes, we're doing this.
Oh, I'm going to be so embarrassed. This is not going to be good. I don't want to go back and remember the film reviews I did from like however many years ago.
God, I wonder what the first film review we did was. What was the first movie?
Lord even knows. My God. We were probably gushing.
The Nickel and Dime Show?
We were probably gushing over like the Coen brothers or something.
Yeah, probably.
That sounds like our speed.
Legit good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Reviews. It's got a 79 out of 100 on Metacritic. So fairly positively reviewed. I think it's solid. But yeah, this will go on to spawn so many sequels across the GBA and then onto the DS until... it will finally be given its merciful, unceremonious death. I don't know if I've made this clear. I'm not super positive on this game.
I believe you.
You sure did a lot of research on this.
Yeah, that's a lot of content for a game you're not crazy about.
I feel like we should spend some sort of time on a Nintendo game. We talked about the GameCube, we talked about Mega
Man. You're telling me you don't want to talk about Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase? Or Lego Island 2, Brickster's Revenge, Lego Bionicle,
unless...
the Wild Thornberries, Chimp Chase? I'm not done. Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, Lady Saya, Batman Vengeance. That game, by the way, came out on Windows, PS2, will come out of the GameCube, Xbox. Oh my God. E.T.'s Digital Companion. That came out of the Game
Boy. I will say that Phoenix Wright was Japan only.
Oh.
Because we will talk about that one when it comes to North America on the DS.
Spyro. Season of Ice. Boxing Fever. Dude.
I don't want to talk about Scooby-Doo unless Matthew Lillard is voicing Shaggy.
What was the Mega Man game you just talked about? There were two Mega Man games.
Battle Network. What was the other one?
Extreme 2. But X.
That one we talked about because that must be a Japan or Europe release date, because that one came out on the Game Boy original, I think.
Oh.
In North America.
Well, anyway. Can you pencil me in right now for about 15 minutes on this Wild Thornberries game?
Yep.
No.
We'll get that going.
Just kidding.
She can talk to animals, John.
So there were no Dreamcast games of note, which makes sense because that console is now dead.
Virtua Tennis 2. I've got the list. I can't tell you if it's good or not, but I've got the list.
So. But there are some PS2 games of note. Time Crisis 2.
Yep. Ooh, Sonic Crisis is a fun game.
I do good in the arcade, though.
But I think that is definitely an arcade.
You need the pedal step.
I think that's the definitive experience. I think we all agree that Time Crisis is best suited as an arcade cabinet.
Yeah.
Let's see. Devil May Cry. The original Devil May Cry.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Reinvents the 2D hack and slash genre.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. The sort of like evolution.
We would not have our Bayonetta 3s right now if not for a game like Devil May Cry.
And it's funny because...
probably your Nier Automata even.
So yeah, certainly. Certainly. It kind of... indirectly evolved the sort of brawler genre into these like more character action games where it's a lot of enemies and you doing like your combos to take them out. Did you play the original Devil May Cry?
I did beat it.
Okay, good.
But two,
you got further than me did then.
Yeah, I mean it was a game.
You raise a good point, Wes. It was a game. So,
because I didn't play until after Devil May Cry 3, which we both played, and
really good.
We enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back. I was like, I should experience the other Devil May Cries, and I was like, wow, this is how did they make it to 3?
I think 1 was a solid game. And like Ryan was saying, like you don't get. Like the evolution of Devil May Cry 3. You don't get games like God of War unless you get Devil May Cry, which is kind of funny because it is like this, like I was saying, a sort of a evolution of a brawler in three dimensions. But it was kind of like created originally, it was the sort of skeleton of the next Resident Evil game. But it was turning out to be so different from Resident Evil. It was like, no. This isn't Resident Evil. This is something different. Go ahead and make something different. And that sort of restarts.
It does kind of have a Resident Evil kind of feel to it.
Definitely in the sort of like horror aesthetic. But it sort of restarts the clock and the development on what would eventually become Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that like both of those games came from the sort of the same sort of nutsack of sperm that is Devil May Cry.
All right.
That's the only... That's the only analogy I come up with. I'm sorry.
It's like a blueprint, I guess.
Blueprint. Thank you. That's better. I'm going to
cut that out. The nutsack of sperm. Yeah.
Yes.
Same seed. There we go. Still kind of the same thing. Anyway.
I just remember a really annoying boss. I was on a ship in a cave, and it's a bird, and just kept flying back and forth on the ship.
Are we talking about Devil May Cry? Oh, I thought we were talking about your life. Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That too. But no, I couldn't... that boss was really annoying. That's the only real memory I got of that game was how much I hated that fucking boss.
But it sort of like marries the sort of ranged and melee attacks. He's got his guns and he's got his sword. I can't remember if he had different equipable weapons as he did in 3.
He did. There was a couple of... I can't remember. I only can remember one. He had a different sword that looked like his sword, except it had a different moveset.
Hmm. Okay.
And it was like lightning. I don't know.
Oh, like a different elemental sort of attribute?
Yeah, it was like some kind of lightning sword. I don't know. And the guns never made any sense to me, because they always did so minor damage.
Right, so what were you doing with the guns most of the time? Is
just trying to keep your combo going or something?
You're just trying to string the next combo together, so... I don't remember. We were saying I don't remember a lot. In Devil May Cry 3, you get graded on your combo performance, how long you're able to keep it going, how many different types of moves that you're using, and that will feed into your reward for the fight. They'll give you more of the economy of the game, the money, and you'll use that to do things like upgrade your weapon set or your play style. And... You're, of course, not going to be able to keep infinite combos going with your sword. Eventually, these things come to an end with, like, a finisher move. But what it'll do is it will allow your guns will allow you just to give you, like, some chip, pop some damage just to keep your combo meter from depleting. Mm-hmm. And you can't just, like, use the guns to fill up your combo meter as much as you want. Eventually, like, if you're doing the same things over and over again, it will start to deplete your combo meter. So you got to keep changing it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really fun, energetic, like a birth of a hack and slash. I can't think of an example of this type of game before this one.
It says it's actually available on the Switch. It was made available June 2019.
Yep.
So I saw it today on the eShop.
And this was Capcom Shenanigans. that hopefully they've gotten over at this point in Switch, where they would release an HD collection on a competing console and then start releasing the game piecemeal on Switch, individually priced for the same price as the HD collection on other consoles. I think Capcom's gotten their shit together. They better.
Yeah.
I see what they're up to.
These reviews are impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive. You know, you're seeing minimum 9 out of 10 on most reviews.
A lot
of them perfect scores, 9.6 out of 10, 9.5.
I don't have very fond memories of this
game. This game was... We use this phrase a lot, especially when we're doing retro. Like, this was next gen. This was like a step up from anything you had seen before.
I know,
like,
2 did not review well.
No, 2 was... At least it's not remembered well. I don't remember specifically. Like, it could have been a situation where it reviewed well, but then after people got some distance, they could have been like, eh, maybe that wasn't so great. But it's not well remembered, that's for sure.
Yeah. But 3 is great. 3 was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I lost touch with the series.
I did play 4, and I did play the newest one. I did not play the reimagined one that they did. That one was... I did not play that one.
Oh, that was the one where it was a dating sim.
No, he's like a different guy altogether.
But you guys, speaking of next gen
and
revolutionary games, my goodness, Grand Theft Auto 3. This was like the start of the modern age of gaming.
Game of the year, certainly for this year. Probably the game of the decade.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So it's the best-selling game of this year, of course, 2001. It will be the second best-selling game of the next year.
Mm.
That's how fucking big this thing was.
Oh, yeah. Grand Theft
Auto. Do you know what the best-selling game was next year?
In 2002?
Vice City. The sequel to this game. Like, that's how monolithic this is, the fucking game
is. And that will continue. Like, Grand Theft Auto 5, a game that's a decade old, is still one of the best-selling games every year.
Yeah. So, did you guys have a lot of experience playing the game?
No.
This is a game I've clocked hundreds of hours playing.
This is one of those games where they bring it up in church and they're like, this was a terrible sin on mankind.
I think so.
Yeah, they discussed it in my church.
When
you can pick up a prostitute, bang her, and then murder her for more points, you're like, yeah, that's kind of fucked up.
And this is a series that will have those sort of
false
controversies.
That's not true. What you just said is not true.
Is it not true?
No, they don't. Well, I think that's a total misunderstanding about what this game actually
is. There was a misunderstanding about this.
This is what they said in church. I don't know. No. I never played it. I'm not claiming that is the case. That's just what they said in church.
There is a misunderstanding about what this game is and the things that you can do, but it did sort of garnish that reputation of these different things that you could do, and then it became the perception of that this is what this game is. Not to people who actually knew about it. This was a sort of outsider, like a sort of miniature version of like a Satanic Panic from like D&D.
It definitely was. This game was one of those panics.
But I think
I think so. What this game is, right? This is a sandbox game,
mm-hmm.
essentially. This is not only is it a sandbox game, this is the first true delivery of a sandbox game. This is the first time you're in a game that feels like you can just go and do. It's directionless, but you don't care. The world is there for you to actually go and explore and find out how things are. And I think it's really incredible what a living, breathing piece of gaming it is to just be in the world. And I'm now 20 years later, and after so many installments, they've made it look and feel more real and make it feel like more of a vivid city. But at the time, you know, you go back in time to 2001 that we're talking about, it is, not only is it next gen, it feels like it's ahead of that gen.
Oh, yeah.
This game feels so fucking far ahead of its time. It's unbelievable. And I think one of the best elements of this game is that it isn't outlandish. It isn't that thing that everybody said about it. This is a game, like, you play so many first-person shooters where it's like, combo killer, like, monster kill, somebody stop him.
Blood and guts.
Blood and guts spraying everywhere.
Orgasm.
This is a very down-to-earth real world that's been created. Like, your character wears,
do your taxes.
Olive jeans and a jacket. Like, you don't look special. You don't look... You just look like you're some guy.
You're
some guy in New York City, or what is it? Liberty City is where this is supposed to take place, right? The cars are like normal cars. The cars you see driving down the streets are fucking Toyota Camrys. You know, it's a very normal, real world.
So 2001, the Ford Taurus.
Yeah, right. I mean, and again, they don't use the names of the cars, but they're all clearly modeled after real cars. So, like, when you're just dropped into the world, the first things that you do are just basically, like, deliveries and escort missions. It gets you into the groove of the world. So if you want to be that person that goes off and, like, steals the nearest car and runs over a hooker or something, it's like, you can do that, but you're not getting rewarded for that. The cops are going to start chasing you. And by the way, unless you... You will never beat the cops. That's an important thing to remember. The cops will always win. It doesn't matter what your body count is and how many cops you take out. They will never stop chasing you unless you go and basically get your car scrubbed and basically choose to stop fighting the cops. Mm. They will kill you. There is no winning. There is no point where you, like, the game says, you've killed enough cops, good for you. You will always die and they will always come after you. Like, they're relentless. It actually is, I think, a very interesting mechanic of the game. It says you can be a psychopath, but it constantly tells you not to be a psychopath. And being a psychopath doesn't help you in the game itself. I think that's totally... And yeah, you're right, the whole satanic panic and everything, and it's like, this is corrupting our kids. Because yeah, you can go pick up a prostitute and bang her in the car. It's just sort of like an in-joke. It's almost like it's a novelty that you do that. And do you guys know what happens when you do that?
It restores your HP, doesn't it?
Does it?
I don't know, maybe. Maybe I'm thinking of a different game.
All that's going to happen is you pull up, she'll get in your car, you drive somewhere, and then you just sort of see, like, the back axle kind of bounce up and down a little bit for a few seconds, and then she gets out of the car, and you lose money. Like, so that's, was that what you were hoping it would be? Is this this fucking scandalous thing?
Did you have too much money?
Keep
have
in mind,
this lady come take it away from you.
You can go play a Duke Nukem game.
Freeze, I'm a cop!
Where in one room will be... a stripper who's missing half of her body because she's been torn in half by aliens, and the other one is a live stripper on a pole that you can shoot with a rocket launcher and blow her up.
And Duke Nukem's style.
That's Duke Nukem.
Uh-huh.
And this is the game everyone's pissed about? This game is a love letter to, like, the mafia. Like, the American love of the mafia.
I don't think that's helping your case.
Well,
No. Americans love the mafia, but you don't, like, nobody in church is like, don't ever let your children watch The Godfather. Or, oh no, that movie Goodfellas, it'll corrupt your children. Like, they worship Satan.
Yeah, there are movies that right? are considered, like, high art that are glorifying
crime. The Sopranos. Like, Americans love the mafia.
The Sopranos, which will debut in 2001.
Right. So this game is very much about that. I think that's what this is about.
I think the difference, like, why something like Grand Theft Auto or versus Duke Nukem is scandalized is notoriety. Like, Grand Theft Auto is fucking huge. Duke Nukem, like, combined, like, I would be stunned if combined franchise sales for Duke Nukem even gets to Grand Theft Auto 3.
No, probably not. And Devil May Cry sold very well, but by 2006 they're saying they sold about 1.5 million copies, and this is going to sell 15 million copies in 2 years. And it's going to have the best-selling game next... I think that's the other totally unbelievable thing, is that a little over a year later, they're going to turn around Vice City as well?
Do they undercut their own sales by doing a sequel so quickly?
No, they don't. No, it's amazing.
Well, what I'm saying is...
They have the one and two best-selling games of next year.
What I'm saying is, could they have sold more of 3 if they had waited on Vice City? Maybe, but...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, they totally could have. The revolutionary game. Like, if it's not clear from how I'm talking about this, this will be considered a top 10 game ever made, regardless of console, PC, doesn't matter. This is a top 10 game of all time, rightly so. I have clocked hundreds of hours playing this game and its sequel, Vice City. Fucking incredible. These games are so incredible. And it's not just me saying it. Go back and look at the critics. This is a perfect game. Mm. This game gets the best reviews. Even better than Devil May Cry. Like, I was just shocked by how good Devil May Cry's reviews are. It's nothing. People look back on GTA 3 and realize it's a watershed moment for gaming. It is a 21st century game. It is very modern.
I'm playing Cyberpunk right now, and that's essentially just a futuristic Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, yeah, this is a genre maker.
Yeah.
Like, in the way that we were talking about Doom, like, Doom invents the first-person shooter, or at least becomes synonymous with a first-person shooter.
I mean, there's elements of in Sinking City, the game I've been playing right now. And, you know, I mean, granted, it's really nothing like it, but yeah, all of that DNA you can see in there.
Mm-hmm. The idea that here's a place where you just go do things. And... Mm-hmm. I spent the sort of idea of like emergent gameplay. The game becomes what you do with it.
Oh yeah, there are all these kind of achievements. I remember I spent countless hours just doing ambulance missions. By the way, you can become a taxi driver in the game. You can become an ambulance driver in the game.
But why would you want to play Crazy Taxi?
Yeah, well, again, because this is Crazy Taxi video gamifies being a taxi driver. Mm. This game is just like, how can I without damaging this vehicle? Because that's the other thing. You have to maintain a streak without destroying the vehicle.
Because so it does get damaged.
You have to drive safely. You actually kind of have to drive. You can drive fast and run red lights and stuff, but you can't just bounce into other cars and hit walls and shit. No, like, it's the game so cleverly makes you think you're being the outlaw while making you do everything very safe.
I'm such a criminal. I'm going the speed limit.
Yeah, it's again, just watching the game spin its own wheels is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Very cool. Just a couple other games that I wanted to mention. I guess Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 came out in October on PS2. There was a 3. Another Tony Hawk. I think there might even be a 4. I'm not sure how far they went before they start naming it other things.
There's Underground.
Yeah, they'll start like Tony Hawk Downhill. Like, they'll start giving these things other names rather than just numbers.
Inline Rollerblades. Mm. Tony Hawk Inline Rollerblades.
Yep.
Yeah.
Crash Bandicoot Wrath of Cortex. Wes, you played Crash Bandicoot games, right?
I think I played the 3. Mm. That was it.
I am really unfamiliar. I don't know what number this would be. Where it falls in line.
It's such an interesting game because it's one of those games where I'm like, I would like to go back and play it and see what's going on with this because I have fond memories of it, but at the same time, I'm like, I know I'm gonna hate every second of this. Mm.
There's
no way this aged well. There's no way this aged well. This is gonna be ugh. Mm. But they made a 4.
They'll do like a team racing game too.
Yeah,
that Crash Bandicoot was hot for a little while.
Yeah,
Ryan, you got any other games?
Just to mention that Civ 3 came out, a long running series nice. For people that like RTS games. It's like probably the RTS game if there ever was one.
And it was like sort of like also a management sim to a certain extent.
Yeah, yeah. Made by Fraxis Games, who to this day are still making great games in the form of XCOM, XCOM 2. And it sold about 1 million copies, so for as dry the content is on a game like this, it sold very, very well, and obviously it's a long-running series, people like it.
Do we mention that Rockstar did Grand Theft Auto 3?
I don't even think we mentioned them by names. No, yeah, you're right, Rockstar is the company responsible. They also make Dead Red Dead
Redemption. And it's so funny, because I can't remember if this is their first PS2 game, but they went by a different name, and we talked about this when we talked about N64 games.
DMA Design? Is that what you're talking about?
Maybe. But they did a couple of N64 games that we talked about, and then they go on to make
Body Harvest.
Yeah, Body Harvest.
God.
And then like I think it might have been the first or one of the first games that they make for PS2 goes on to be like one of the most important games ever made. Yeah. Like, as soon as they stop making Nintendo games, like Grand Theft Auto 3.
Oh, and it's also funny because we didn't even talk about Grand Theft Auto 1 or 2. Mm. Games that I've also played. As well, and of course, really nothing like this. That is a game that is very much a
driving games.
Yeah, yeah, it's a top-down car thing, and you're trying to kill as many people as you can. It's like,
yeah, I remember trying to get the tank and mm-hmm. getting on buildings with the tank. You know, just nonsense.
Yeah. Oh, a fun fact: there's a low gravity cheat in. I hope it's 3. It's either 3 or Vice City, but there's a really fun thing you can do where you can turn on low gravity, If you steal a tank from the military base and you turn the cannon all the way around so it's facing behind you and you start spamming the cannon shoot, you actually can sustain flight.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually fly around the map in the tank. It's absurd. It's so much fun. I remember one of them was like, I had to basically snipe a guy, I had to kill a guy, and I flew a tank.
Well done.
These are the fun little... I really wish I actually went back and played some Grand Theft Auto 3, because there's so many fun little moments and little things in the game.
I wonder, since we are in October of 2001, I wonder what the sort of perception of this game would have been had we not been attacked. You know, like what Wes was saying, like panic around, like the sort of like perception of lawlessness.
If your average politician had more things to care about than Oh, the death of thousands from terrorist attacks. I bet you there would have been outright bans of this game in certain places.
Oh, you think it would have been worse if we hadn't been?
Without the, yeah, you saw how people would freak out about fucking killer bees and shark attacks? Imagine if there was no giant terrorist threat and wars to cover on the news, and they gotta fill fucking time on your local news channel making you afraid of something. They're going to go after Grand Theft Auto 3. They're going to find the first kid that steals a car, and they're going to say, yeah, I own a PlayStation. And they're like, boom, there you go.
We got him.
Yeah.
But I would hypothesize, like at the time
you before, think it wouldn't have been so bad?
No, I think that we would have been like so nihilistic about it. Like, we didn't really care. We had nothing, no great obstacles to overcome in society anymore, so we thought. That it would be like, yeah, whatever. So it's a video game, and they're driving around these cars, who cares? I don't think we would have paid much attention. But
it was the time to be alive.
It was a time to be alive. There's no way we'll know for sure unless we get, you know, Jerry O'Connell on the phone and start sliding different universes. But it's the only way.
It's a great reference.
It's the only way to... It is 2001. So, I think we're done with games. Take a quick break and then come back with some other stuff.
That's it.
Cool.